Right now, we talk to Peter Allam, talking legal matters. Peter, very good morning and welcome.
It's a lovely morning, like you mentioned again. What a lovely weekend we've had. No wind, beautiful sunshine, nice and hot. And I think today there's a bit of a berg wind out there, if I'm not mistaken.
Indeed, indeed.
Yeah. Wayne, three nice topics today, like you mentioned. You know, lending money that causes problems. Let's start with that one. Mm-hmm. So a friend asks you to give them a loan and you advance them. Let's just use a sum, 10,000 Rand. And then you keep on going back to him to say, you know, when you're going to pay it back, when you're going to pay it back, and he avoids you. What can you do? Now, this was something, when I looked at the topic, that comes up very, very often in the small claims court. Mm. I would say every single time I've sat in the small claims court, somebody has been there to say, oh, I gave a friend 10,000 Rand or, you know, less than 20,000, which is the limit in the small claims court, and he refuses to pay it back. Now, the key to this one is that when they come along and they say, Joseph owes me, for example, 6,000 Rand. So the first thing as a commissioner, we've got to establish that it is a genuine amount and ask them what amount was paid. And that's when they start dodging. They start saying, nah, I'm an R, and then if we insist on getting proof, you know, they battle to give you proof invariably. Eventually they'll come and they'll say, okay, here's the payment, and you have a look and they only advance 3,000, but they expect to double back because it was the silly arrangement that was made at the time between the two. But that's not a binding agreement because they're not credit providers. So they cannot enter into credit transactions if they're not a registered credit provider. And likewise, you cannot go ahead and claim interest on money that you lend to a friend if you're not a credit provider and entitled to claim credit. So it's very important that when you're lending money, you understand that if you are not registered, you do not have a right to collect more than what you gave. Mm. But there is a thing called default interest. So the better thing to do, well, not the better thing, but what has to be done, is ensure that you put it into the form of an acknowledgement of debt or an agreement between the two parties to say, this is what I'm going to do. And, you know, if you say there that Joseph's going to lose X amount on his investment because he's helping me and I'm happy to pay back, you know, the amount plus the interest that he would have earned, you can come to an agreement like that. You don't have to be a credit provider for that because it's been you're assisting someone and you've put it into writing. Obviously, as well, you can do an acknowledgement of debt, which says that if the party fails to pay back on a date, then interest will become applicable. Then it's default interest and it's a proper agreement in that regard. So it's not a case of you can never get interest. You've just got to do it the right way around. Mm-hmm. So, you know, an arm's length just handover of money, be extremely cautious with. You know, it falls, does not fall under the National Credit Act, and no interest can be got from that. Mm. You know, that's why I say always, don't lend money to a family member or to a friend without tying it up correctly. How many times don't I just see relationships that have gone sour over that very same thing? You know, people come along. Then you get the good Samaritan who's going to help the other party because they've got a little problem. And then the other party just doesn't make any effort to pay it back. Mm. So make sure that your agreement is not an unlawful credit agreement and that it would then be void and unenforceable. That's what I'm getting at with that particular one today. You know, the court cases are clear in that regard. The key factors is that an oral agreement and an informal agreement, not reduced to writing, no go in the High Court. The High Court refused, and it was a substantial amount. The court case that I'm referring to was an amount of, I think, about 300,000.
Wow.
And they came back and said, no, bad luck, you know. Mm. Bottom line, the lender can, you know, not get it unless the proper agreement reduced to writing with payback dates and that. Mm, so make sure that you've covered. So that's the one over there. The other one that's so important today is potholes. I mean, we are just full of potholes. And almost daily there's a request for compensation from the municipalities, from wherever, the district municipalities, to say, you know, I want to claim for the pothole damage that's been caused. Now, it's not an easy thing. You know, I heard once somebody said, you know, motor vehicles have to be roadworthy. So why should the roads also not be car-worthy? You know, roadworthy and car-worthy go together. But we know that there's a major problem throughout our country with potholes. It's not just special to our area, especially our little Wild Coast area there. It's the whole of South Africa. And yes, you can be successful with a pothole cover for something that's damaged your motor vehicle. But the very important thing here is that you've got to prove negligence on the part of the municipality. So, you know, the negligence must be the sole cause of the accident as well. So you can't come along and say, I travel the road to Sinsta every night and I know there's a big pothole there, but this time I didn't see it and I drove through it by mistake. You know, that's not good enough because you're aware that it's there. So, you know, the facts are such that to hold them liable, it must be something that you haven't noticed or that you're a stranger to the road. It's your first time on there and that there's no pothole warning. You see these signboards that say potholes for 10Ks or whatever. So the duty is on you as a driver as well to keep a proper lookout. That's what we're getting at, basically. You know, you're obliged to maintain a proper lookout. It's the same as people think that if they're on a road and a car turns in front of them or a car turns into them, there's no liability on you. Of course, there's a percentage. You know, they will definitely percentage the 80-20 split or something like that because you have not kept a proper lookout. So very important with your driving is make sure you keep a proper lookout. Potholes, vehicles in front of you, people on the side of the road. You know, don't say you were blinded by the sun or something like that and you didn't see the pothole. Not going to help you at all. So, you know, the risk is there, but you've got to make sure that you also look after the risk and avoid it. So, you know, potholes are very, 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 how can I say, dodgy on the road. Let's call it that.
You've got to dodge the dodgy potholes.
Yeah. Beware of potholes.
Yeah.
So the contributory negligence of the motorist is taken into account by the courts when there is a claim for that. You know, you can be seriously injured in one of those. You know, you get some deep ones. I mean, we've seen potholes where guys are lying in there having a bath, how bad they are. And I mean, we've got one or two in our road here that are very, very bad. Fortunately, we have those workers, gents that have been filling them with sand, which is really appreciated by a lot of us. But yeah, be cautious. Don't go through a pothole and have a flat and then think you're going to just claim from the municipality. Yeah. I remember when they first started years back, we used to do quite a few claims where people had gone through a pothole, submitted to BCM, and I must say BCM were very good in submitting it to the insurance company and paying out. But those days are gone. There's so many of
there's
them now.
Too many.
I think that, yeah, they'd have to have a full-time party fixing, well, not fixing potholes, but looking after pothole claims and inspecting where they are on that. So, yeah, beware of the pothole.
Okay.
It's dangerous, very dangerous.
And Peter, just a quick one on the question of potholes, and this might be a chat for a different topic because it might be a little bit more intricate and complicated. But where does the law stand regarding Joe Public actually filling potholes? Now, I heard that it is not really allowed. But I think we're at a point at the moment where we need to actually help ourselves. Otherwise, we won't have roads to drive on and we won't have cars that are able to run on the roads because they'd be too damaged. So, you know, somewhere or other, obviously the authorities are turning a blind eye to the DIY pothole repairs, while at the same time, it should actually not be happening. But then at the same time, the government should be fixing them. So, you know, where do we find ourselves here? Because if we don't do it ourselves, we would actually be traveling on cattle ruts.
Absolutely. That's a very, very good question. Something you're not the first one to ask me that. Funny enough, that's what made me talk on potholes today. Because somebody said to me, like the guy on the side of the road, the people are now dropping off bags of tar with him. Is it allowed? Can I buy tar, or am I contributing to something illegal? So I will check it, and we will give an answer next week
Okay.
on what the position is there. Because, and I'm also going to investigate where those bags are coming from, and what they cost, because I think there are a lot more people that are quite willing to purchase and have a drop-off point for them. I know that the good old hardware shop at Crossways assists a lot in that regard. They must be commended for that, and I'm not advertising for them, but indeed it's something that seems to go through them. But basically, yes, you cannot touch a pothole in the sense that the roads belong to whoever it is, be it SANRAL or be it the municipality. So it's their responsibility. So if you do something and you don't put the right stuff down, or you fix the pothole with the wrong stuff, they have a right of recourse against you, unfortunately, because you've interfered with them. It's like, anything. Somebody can't come along and do something to your possessions. They belong to you. Those roads belong to SANRAL. Those roads belong to the various municipalities or district municipalities. But we will give a definite answer there, what their stance is on it. And in fact, if necessary, I'll make a call to say, what is the position of people, filling potholes? Do we have permission? So we will get that answer for you,
Well,
Wayne.
unfortunately, the nature of the relationship between the public and the, shall we say, the government in its various forms at the moment is probably not very, very good. And I would, I'm just sort of speaking tongue in cheek, I would actually like to see an entity like SANRAL challenge a private individual for attempting to fix a road, because I can imagine that that would become, it would probably become one of the most interesting court cases in history, because it would probably become a to and fro tennis match. SANRAL, for
Absolutely.
instance, is not doing their job properly, therefore Joe Public is doing it. Joe Public maybe used Sabunga instead of tar or whatever, I'm using an example, and SANRAL is not happy with it, so they drag us to court. Well, I would kind of say, well, see us in court and let's see how this one pans out.
Absolutely. It's a sad state of affairs, a sad situation that arises, because strictly in terms of the law, it would probably be illegal. But I mean, in the not only lives that they're saving, but the vehicles that they're saving from damage, that the people they're saving from stress. I mean, I've got friends that say to me they won't travel home along our road at night. They make sure they're home when it's still light, because they don't know where the potholes are. I think I know where the potholes are. I could probably drive blindfolded and know exactly where the potholes are, and I'm sure you can as well, because we travel that road every day. But you get people that come out there for a one-off, they're going for supper, the game lodge, or play golf out at the golf course, and they've got to go on this road that, I mean, either way, you come from the top end or the bottom end, and it's just potholes everywhere. But yes, I think the community as well, though, it's got to the stage where we need to realize that the people are just not going to fix the roads, and that the funding is just not there. So the community have got to do it. And there are a lot of guys in the community that, come out and assist in that regard, which makes us really proud of the community where we live.
And
Anyway,
then,
that's pothole.
and
The
I'm
third one
snaglist.
that I've got is that there was an interesting decision recently, is, that snag list. Be careful of the snag list if you're buying or selling a house. You need to make sure that it's done. You need to make sure that it's proper. You need to investigate it. So, what a lot of people do is that, and this is the baddie that comes in, is that you walk into a house and it's damp and it's got dampness, and then the agent says, "Ah, you know what you must do? Just get a bloody 5 liter tin of white paint and just repaint it so that it looks good." You're not going to get away with that. Be very, very careful, because what must happen is that the dampness that's been filled with polyfill paint, if it comes out down the line, call it 3, 4, 5, 6 months later, and the purchaser is able to prove that it was there beforehand, you have a major problem. In fact, in the matter that I'm referring to, where there was recently a decision, it cost the seller 250, in excess of 250,000, because what they'd done is that they'd taken, polyfilled the dampness, scraped it down, polyfilled it, put another coat of paint on, another coat of paint, so that it looked perfect. But 3 months into the purchase has been there, they found the damp, and they went back at them, and the court came to their rescue and said, you cannot do that. You should have disclosed it. And they said, oh, but we fixed it. No, it wasn't fixed correctly. There's a proper damp problem that needs to be done correctly. So, you know, the buyer must just prove that there was a defect, which is easy enough because you can get the experts that will come along and show that it had been affected, and there should be no difficulty in doing that. But, of course, there's a second part to it. There's what you call latent, not patent. So the damp was a latent defect. That means that it was not obvious or patent to the buyer. So it was hidden. That's important because latent defects are defects that would not have been visible or discoverable from an inspection. You walk through the house and it looks perfect. But the owners knew about the dampness that was there, and they tried to hide it by doing a quick repair job. It's tantamount probably to fraud because knowing that it's wrong, you know, you still carry the risk of trying to fix it in a evil way, if I can call it that. So, you know, the property, we get back to the snag list, which is a property condition report. Be careful. You know, you must make sure that you are open and honest. Rather come along and say, that wall is damp. I'm not going to fix it. I'm telling you that it's damp. And my price is X because it allows for that dampness.
Yeah.
Don't come along and sell something that's clear. Obviously, where the person doesn't know at all. I mean, I recently had a matter where a roof was in question, and you know, the old lady had never climbed up onto the roof to inspect it. So you couldn't expect her to be able to report on the roof. But if you are a seller, make sure that you do. You need to get somebody up there to have a look. You know, the court doesn't take kindly to people hiding stuff. So, you know, in fact, in the one that I had, there were no repairs ever done to the roof. And the example given was another one where it was full of patches. So the person could not say that they did not know about it. So the snag list, every week we talk about property transfers. Almost make sure that your snag list is disclosed correctly. Don't hide anything. Come out with it up front. Otherwise, it's going to come back and bite you seriously.
And you could be thinking, oh, well, you know, we've sold this property and everything's fine and dandy. The money's transferred. The deeds and everything have transferred. And then the whole thing erupts once again. It would, as you said, would be better. Look, there's dampness in that corner. We don't know where it's coming from, but we haven't repaired it for the simple reason is that it needs to be visible, you know, so that you can be transparent.
Absolutely. Very, very important. Yeah. Got to just make sure that you cover yourself properly. It's so, so important. Don't make a mistake and not do so. That's very important.
And I think living along the coast and a lot of areas in East London, dampness is a reasonably big problem. You know, especially the number of old houses we've got in East London, and then, you know, coastal areas where maybe drainage is not as good as it should be, or you got the sea air and all sorts of things cause dampness. And, you know, you need to be on the lookout for it. And also maybe as a buyer, just make sure that you don't get caught with a quick repair job that the previous owners have done to conceal something.
Absolutely. It's very, very important that. And, you know, I'm going to say as well, especially along the coast where we are, properties there are moving. Properties there are very old. I mean, those resorts over there have been in existence for years and years and years. So if you're buying there, anticipate that there's not going to be the perfect home and ask, what are the problems? I mean, you know, I had one the other day where the person came to me and said, geez, I bought this house, but I'm not happy because I've discovered that the foundations are made of shingles. Well, in the old days, that's what they used. You know, they took a piece of pitch and they did it. There's nothing wrong. The foundations are solid. The guy wasn't happy, but the previous owner then got an engineer in who said there's absolutely nothing wrong with it. You know, it was a way of doing it at the time. accepted mode, and that's it. You might not get away with it today because of the building regulations, but at the time that the house was built, it was solid. You know, it's not a case to withdraw your offer and, or, you know, cancel the sale and that type of thing because of a short foundation, for example.
Sure. But interesting, and, you know, it's once again, buyer beware and seller, don't try and hoodwink. I think that's the
very important.
That's the thing there, honesty. And Peter, if somebody wants to get in touch with you, we covered a number of topics today, but how do they get hold of Alam's attorneys?
Yeah, they can like us on Facebook. Just add an S to the surname Alam, A-L-L-A-M for Mary, S for sugar. And then on Facebook, you'll find all our chats with yourselves and other articles from time to time. Alternatively, we're situated at 6 Sansom Road in Vincent, the little side street where Pep Stores is off Deborah Avenue. Telephone 043-7211-018. I'll repeat the phone number, 043-7211-018.
Great. Peter, thank you very, very much. Have a great day. Have a great week. And we'll chat again next week.
Super. Thanks, Ryan.
Cheers then. Thanks. That's Peter Alam with today's Legal Eagle Chat. And we'll talk to him again next week. And don't forget, this chat will be on our website later on today under our podcasts. That's wildcoastradio.co.za.